bit lacking. Have you ever seen gladiators fight, Master Amit? If not, you're in for quite a treat, Aiden said, his steps quick and light. There's nothing like it in all the world.
I've never seen gladiators, Waldo said, but I've watched men kill each other for sport.
Besides the winter solstice, he'd also seen plenty of matches at home. His mother often made slaves fight each other to the death. It was a form of family entertainment, more interesting than jugglers or poetry readings, less so than a play or performance by the sex slaves.
That's a surprise. I know how white mages feel about blood sport.
Oh, we love it. Can't get enough of it. In my country, people fight each other all the time for fun. You can hardly go to the privy without passing a couple people having a knife fight.
Aiden's eyes widened.
If that's true, then why do white mages always condemn the games?
Because we're the absolute worst hypocrites. Also, we're plotting to take over the world. Beside him, Alice sighed and began to rub her temples. Aiden chuckled.
You have an excellent sense of humor.
Glad you think so.
So long as you keep an open mind, I do promise you will enjoy yourself. At least until the final match.
That's when Bell will be fighting? Aiden nodded, making the feathers on his head dance.
I always save the best for last. Keeps the fans in their seats until the very end. We'll have 11 matches tonight, a full evening's worth of entertainment plus. On an ordinary night, we would only have 10, but tonight is special.
You're assuming Bell is going to lose, Waldo said.
Asgard is a veteran gladiator and most skilled. He has survived the pits for many years. Except for Vaka, he is easily the finest warrior in the city.
But only human, Waldo thought. Bell may surprise you.
Aiden's smile stretched from ear to ear. I don't doubt there will be surprises. They are always entertaining, though not always welcome.
Someone had scratched, Garth licks my balls.
This place doesn't have quite the sense of grandeur I was expecting, Waldo said.
Aiden chuckled.
Grandeur isn't for the likes of us, Master Rabbit. That's for the arena and the queen. You won't find any kings or lords or high priests sitting in the stands here. No, our fans are commoners, small people leading small lives. They don't come here for splendor or spectacle. They come here for excitement, for a show, for blood. They pay their money to see men fighting for their lives, for a thrill they can't get anywhere else.
That's horrible, Alice said. How can you sleep at night?
On a feather bed between two pretty maids.
Alice narrowed her eyes.
Your wife lacks your sense of humor, Master Rabbit.
Waldo shrugged.
Most do. I'm a showman, an entertainer. I just give the people what they want.
You make men kill each other and profit from it, Alice said.
That's right. My establishment holds 5,000, and there are never any empty seats. I put on matches every single week, and the crowds come. They pay a copper mark each to watch and cheer and bet, and they always come back for more. I always put on a great show for my customers.
It's not a show to the people who die.
No, just to the ones who fill my purse.
So everyone who comes here has to pay to get in? Waldo asked. Aiden waved a hand at him.
Everyone save my guests, which tonight includes only the two of you and one other.
I saw someone giving away free tickets to the Queen's tournament.
Well, the arena is only open 4 days a year, and each time it's a big event that draws high-born visitors. The Queen is always in attendance, and there is always a big prize for the champion. The best seats are dear. They'll go for 1, 2, or even 3 silver marks each.
Then why were they giving away free tickets? Waldo asked.
The arena seats 60,000, and there aren't that many who can afford those prices. Even with all our wealthy guests, I doubt more than a few thousand pay to get in.
But Her Majesty would probably feel a little embarrassed if the arena were 9/10 empty during her birthday tournament. So she gives all the unsold tickets away to her beloved subjects.
Aiden tapped the side of his nose with a finger. She does it out of love and mercy. Everything she does is always out of love and mercy.
Including letting her people go hungry?
Absolutely. Love and mercy for her own pockets. It costs her nothing to let someone sit inside the arena for a few hours. Wheat is another matter.
And you never give away free tickets yourself?
Aiden shook his head.
I am not a ruler, just a humble businessman. A few empty seats wouldn't bother me, but there's no need.
People love the games, and I only charge 1 copper mark. Even most of the rats can afford that. It's certainly cheaper than a loaf of bread these days.
Wait a minute, Alice said. You have 5,000 seats and charge 1 copper coin for each. So that means you only bring in 5,000 copper coins each time. So you're only making 2.5 gold coins.
Only? Aiden snorted. Not all of us get to marry a wealthy white maid from Avalon. I'm sure to you that seems like a paltry sum. No doubt you spend more than that on shoes.
Almost, Waldo muttered. Alice jabbed a finger into his ribs.
But to most, Aiden continued, that is a huge amount, and I make it every week.
I know it's a lot of money, Alice said, but how could you afford to spend 5 gold coins to get Bell to fight here? Won't you be taking a massive loss?
Not at all, Aiden proclaimed, waving a hand through the air. I didn't pay it. You see, someone else wanted this particular match and gave me the money.
Who? My other guest. Their walk beneath the stands ended at a wooden staircase with a pair of guards. Aiden went up the stairs with Waldo and Alice following. As Waldo climbed the steps, he could sense what was waiting. The stairway led to the back of a rostrum, which overlooked the fighting pit. There was a massive blackboard at the back and a circular balcony that hung over the sands. On the platform itself, there were 3 couches spread out in a U, with a single banquet table laden down with food and drink. 4 pretty girls in dresses slipped down the sides, waited to serve. And lying back in one of the couches was a man in crimson and gold robes.
Master Rabbit, the man said with a slight nod of his head. He did not bother to stand.
Master Lysnam, Waldo returned the nod. I'm glad you could join us. I'm sure this will be a wonderful evening.
For the first time, Waldo began to suspect it might not be. Chapter 27 The Fighting Pit.
You paid to have Bella fight her tonight? Waldo asked.
Oh, you've spoiled the surprise. Lytham gave Aiden a mock shake of his head.
Aiden bowed to the guildmaster.
My apologies, Master Lysnam. I didn't know it was a secret.
Waldo turned to Aiden.
I thought this was going to be a regular fight.
Aiden plopped down on the head couch and waved to one of the girls.
It is, Master Rabbit. I would never lie to a white mage of Avalon, and no matter how this evening turns out, I pray you remember that. I also beg you to remember that I did tell you all matches are to the death.
One of the serving girls brought him a goblet of wine.
You also told me that Bell's opponent would be human.
He is. Aiden took a sip of his wine. I swear it by the gods of the realm. Asgard is as human as you or I.
Alice came to his side.
So long as Bell is fighting a man, I don't have any worries.
Wonderful. Aiden raised his cup in salute. Then you can enjoy this lovely evening without a care in the world.
Waldo shifted his attention to Lysnam.
Why would you give me 5 gold coins just to see Bell fight? You could have seen that tomorrow.
You know how rich my guild is. 5 gold marks is nothing.
It still seems like quite a lot to pay for something you could have gotten for free.
Perhaps I think the match will be worth it.
Lysnam motioned to the couch across from his.
Won't you sit down and relax? These are the best seats in the house, much more comfortable than a cold wooden bench.
Alice placed a hand on his arm.
Darling, maybe we should.
Waldo was frowning, but sat down with her. One of the serving girls asked if he wanted anything. Waldo took a goblet of red wine, while Alice had a bit of cheese brought to her. The stands were more than half full, and people were still coming in. Those already seated were beginning to stomp their feet, clap and shout for the action to start.
Unruly rats, Lysnam muttered.
They're not so bad, Aiden said. They're just excited and can't wait for the fun.
They're dirty, disgusting animals, Lysnam said. They've been attacking guards and wagons trying to deliver wheat to the docks. Stealing is as natural to them as breathing.
Maybe if they weren't so hungry they wouldn't have to, Alice said.
Are we supposed to feed people who don't want to work? A lot of them do work.
Aiden pointed to the serving girls and to a pair of men standing below the large blackboard.
Every serving girl, stable hand, cook, and worker inside the wall comes from here.
Lysnam nodded.
The problem is there are too many of them. If we burned down 9/10 of the rat's nest, we would still have more than enough workers for our needs.
If fire didn't spread so easily, I might suggest it. At least things will be a bit better come the spring with thousands of useless mouths gone.
You're happy innocent people are going to starve this winter?
Alice asked aghast.
You think they'll be missed?
Lysnam asked in return.
By the people who love them, yes. They're living, breathing souls who matter every bit as much as you do.
Lysnam snorted a laugh.
Was she always like this, Master Rabbit, or did you convert her?
Alice has always had a very gentle and kind heart, Waldo said, but no one is perfect. That earned him an elbow in his ribs. Waldo spilled a bit of his wine, but didn't get any on his nice white robes.
There is a simple solution, you know. Let me guess, Lysnam said with disdain. Her Majesty should empty out her granaries and feed all the rats.
Waldo shook his head. Certainly not. Spending money on people who don't provide you anything is a waste. One of Lysnam's eyebrows quirked.
Then why do you and Mistress Cornwall give people free bread?
It's one small part of our plot to take over the world, Waldo said with satisfaction. He was just starting to realize that that excuse could cover a lot of things.
Lysnam frowned, but eyed and looked amused.
All right, then, Lysnam said. What is your solution?
It's simple, really. You just take all the useless mouths and kill them.
Waldo took a finger and slashed it across his throat.
Then you reanimate their bodies and have a massive workforce that won't require food or pay and will work tireless for you until their bodies break down. You can use them to work mines, or build roads, or canals, or be soldiers, or any kind of brute labor. It's a simple, cheap solution where everyone wins, except for the people being massacred and turned into undead. But I think we've established you don't care about them.
The two men stared at him.
What? You don't think it's sensible? I'm sure your guild doesn't have any necromancers, but you can always hire some. If you send to Alteroth, there's an incredibly powerful family that specializes in it. Corpse likers or something like that. I'm sure if you pay well enough, you could hire a few of them.
Iden gave an uncertain laugh.
Your humor is quite something, Master Rabbit.
I was being serious.
Yes, I'm sure you were, Lysnam snapped. Just like before with the dragons.
Waldo nodded. Alice sighed and nibbled on her cheese. People continued to pour in and the empty seats filled. As they did so, the horrible ball of fire left the sky completely, and the last of the daylight bled away. Guards lit a series of braziers that surrounded the wooden stadium and provided plenty of light. Having spent so much time within the Gold City, Waldo found the lack of magical illumination pleasant. As the audience grew, the stomping and the clapping fell into a steady rhythm. Bam, 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 bam. And with a steady beat, the earlier shouts turned into a clear chant. We want blood. We want blood. The cry was steady and constant, and growing louder as more and more people arrived. Waldo found the crowd's excitement rubbing off on him. Back home, the families would cheer on the fighting once it begun, and laugh as the last survivor ran around in circles, trying to escape the zombies. But they were quiet beforehand. The fights were sacrifices to the dark powers after all, with solemn and religious overtones. Plus, there was always a certain element of danger when all the families gathered together. It was never wise to be too relaxed. The mundanes didn't have any of those worries. They were free to revel in the excitement and thrill of approaching bloodshed. All through the stands he spotted mugs and wineskins. He saw flushed faces and mouths open wide, screaming at the top of their lungs. Waldo couldn't remember seeing so much raw joy on so many faces before. The only thing that had ever come close were the festivities of the summer solstice with his family, and those had only involved a few hundred people, not thousands.
How wonderfully savage and carefree they are, Waldo thought, with just a tiny bit of jealousy.
It had to be liberating to be poor and ordinary, and not burdened with great responsibilities.
Alice, meanwhile, looked at the crowd, shaking her head.
How can they be so bloodthirsty?
They're not so bad, Iden said, leaning back in his couch. They lead hard lives without much to look forward to. Most of them can barely manage to keep a roof over their heads and food in their bellies. Winter is coming, and a lot of them are afraid they won't see the spring. All they want is a little fun. A little excitement, to take their minds off their troubles, to be entertained, even if it's only for one night.
And the only way to get that is to see people killed? Alice asked.
Iden laughed and finished his wine.
Do you think they'd cheer like this for a play or a horse race? Once you see, you'll understand. Nothing in this world is as exciting as seeing men try to kill each other.
He rose to his feet and began walking to the balcony.
Iden gave a nod to the two men at the blackboard. They swiftly began chalking a message in thick, foot-tall letters. The balcony hung out over the arena floor and was in the line of sight of every person there. When they saw Iden step into it, hands raised above his head, an eager smile on his face, the crowd stopped its chant, and they jumped to their feet. They were yelling so loud, Waldo couldn't hear himself think. Rather than motion for quiet, Iden balled his hands into fists and pumped them into the air. The crowd responded, screaming so that Waldo placed his hands over his ears. After about a minute of this, they quieted down. Perhaps their throats were starting to hurt.
"Welcome, my friends!"
Iden cried out in a booming voice that carried.
"Welcome to the greatest fighting pit this side of the wall!"
Cheers erupted from them, along with wild applause. It came and went quickly. As Iden spoke, his hands danced about.
"Tonight is a special night. A night filled with excitement, action, life and death thrills."
A voice from somewhere in the stands called out and could be heard clearly.
"You say that every week."
Iden cupped his hands over his mouth.
"And I'm always right."
This brought a chorus of laughter from the crowd.
"But tonight," Iden continued, "we really do have something special. Not the standard 10 matches, but 11. Why? Because 10 wouldn't be enough for all the thrilling, amazing, dazzling, astounding, ball-dropping, heart-pounding, eye-melting, penis-throbbing action."
Cheers, shouts, and applause answered him.
"Savage goblins we have, taken in raids. A fearsome and hungry brown bear. A murderous and wicked drow from the very bowels of the earth. And not one, but two great barbarian warriors. One from the icy north, and one from the distant plains beyond the inner sea. All of them here for you. All of them here to fight for your entertainment. All of them to bleed and kill and die for you."
And the joyous cheers rained down. From beneath the table, one of the serving girls pulled out an hourglass. It was large enough that she needed both hands to carry it. Without any signal, she brought it over to Iden. As she did so, the man twirled about like a dancer, sending his cape flying over his shoulder. He spread both hands to the blackboard, where a message had been written. Boko the Goblin, 1-5, versus 3 men, 5-1.
"Our first exciting match will be the savage Boko against 3 brave new gladiators. Boko is the favorite, with the odds set at 5-1. As always, we are ready to accept bets in any amount. Here is your first chance to win some coin. We honor all bets, so hurry and lay your money down."
Iden took the hourglass from the girl and carefully set it on the wooden railing of the balcony. White sands began to flow from the upper glass bulb to the lower.
"We'll begin the match in 5 minutes, so hurry and place your bets."
Waldo hadn't noticed before, but spread throughout the stands were a dozen enclosed stations surrounded by armed guards. Before Iden even finished speaking, people were lining up in front of them. That wasn't what interested Waldo.
"Goblins and drow?" Waldo demanded as Iden sauntered back to his couch. "I thought non-humans were forbidden to fight in these matches."
Iden gave a quick bow.
"My apologies for any misunderstanding, Master Rabbit. That's so inside the wall, but not out here. Only human gladiators are permitted the honor of fighting in the arena, and before our beloved queen. Outside the wall, we're a bit more open-minded about things. We like to mix it up here in the pits, keep things interesting for the crowds."
"But you said Asgur is human."
Iden bowed again. "You have my word on it. He's a Northman savage, and human to the bone."
Waldo frowned but nodded. That had been what he was going to ask about.
"You take bets on these fights?" Alice crossed her arms. "You really want to make as much money as you can from people dying, don't you?"
"I wouldn't mind, but alas..."
Iden glanced to where Lysden was seated.
"I make my coin from the gate and a tiny fee from the people working the booths, but I have nothing to do directly with any of the bets."
"A long time ago,
Lysnam explained. My guild was given exclusive rights to all gambling in Torikai. Doesn't matter if it's in the Golden City or the Rat's Nest. If you want to place a bet in Torikai, you do it through the guild, or you don't do it at all.
I always thought mages were above that sort of thing, Alice said.
Not all of us can be as pure and altruistic as white mages pretend to be.
He shifted his gaze from Alice to Waldo.
Before the guild was founded, Torikai was nothing special. Just another small, petty little kingdom, like all its neighbors. It was the original members of my guild who had the vision and drive to create the Golden City, the City of Wonders, the City of Fortune and Ruin. We made Torikai the greatest city in the world, and in compensation we were given certain rights.
He narrowed his eyes.
Torikai is ours. It belongs to my guild, and no one is going to take it from us. Not Avalon, not the Drow, no one.
Waldo sighed. I've already told you, I don't care about your guild. All I want is information.
Yes, you're just a complete innocent with pure intentions.
There's no need to be insulting.
When the 5 minutes were up, and the last bit of sand had fallen into the lower half of the hourglass, Aiden marched back into the balcony.
All right! Let's begin the first match!
The crowd roared. The pit was circular and covered in sand. It was separated from the stands by 10 feet of red brick, close enough to reach down and touch one of the contestants, but high enough to keep them trapped. In the brick wall were 8 arched doorways with iron bars. Upon Aiden's command, 2 sets of bars on doors opposite of each other slid out of the way. Out of one stumbled 3 men, each holding a sword in both hands. They had no shields or armor. All they wore were sandals and cloth wrapped about their nether regions, leaving almost all their skin exposed. The men took only a few steps past the door they'd come out of and huddled together. As soon as they were out, the iron bars slid back into place. From the opposite side, charged out a gray form with a turnip-shaped head and thick, muscular arms. Like the 3 men, the goblin had no shield or armor, dressed in nothing but a scrap of cloth. Clutched above his head was a machete.
"Kill, kill, kill!"
It screeched loud enough to be heard by all. The crowd drew in its breath, and Waldo instinctively moved to the edge of the couch. Even Alice leaned forward to get a better view. The 3 men just stood there in confusion as the goblin ran to them. They looked at one another, spoke, backed up a couple steps, and held their swords out in basic defensive stances. Boko did not hesitate and never broke stride. He ran in and attacked the one on the right. The goblin swung down his machete and easily knocked away the blocking sword. The goblin's blade came down on the man's shoulder, and in a single vicious stroke, hacked off the man's right arm. Blood gushed out, and the poor bastard stumbled back, screaming as he clutched at the mangled wound with his remaining hand, his sword still clutched by the arm lying at his feet. The crowd gasped and gave an ooh. Boko ignored the man he'd just maimed, and instead rounded on the other two. One of the fighters backed away, looking as if he were sick. The other charged forward with a shout, swinging his sword wildly. Boko sidestepped, and the sword passed harmlessly in front of him. The goblin then stepped forward as his opponent was trying to get his sword back into position. Even to Waldo, it was obvious the man was panicked and acting without any sort of plan. While he was waving his sword around, Boko stabbed the end of his machete into the side of his ribs and straight out the back. The man cried out and dropped his sword. Boko wrenched his blade out, sending blood and small bits of flesh spilling out. The man fell to his knees, grabbing his side and coughing up blood, still alive, but soon to be dead. The goblin didn't even bother with a finishing blow. Instead, he moved in on the last man who was standing. The man faced up, with the sword held out in front with both hands. Boko slowed now. No longer in a rush, he began to slowly circle his opponent, like a wolf stalking a deer. The bloodied machete was at the ready. The man turned about to keep the goblin right in front of him. Boko gave a lazy swing. The man brought his sword down hard and blocked it cleanly, with a loud clang. The goblin swung again, and again was blocked. A feral smile split the monster's face. It reminded Waldo of a look he'd seen on Enver many, many times. He's just playing with him, Waldo thought. And sure enough, the goblin again made a half-hearted swing. But this time, when the man tried to block, the goblin suddenly pulled back and re-swung with real might. The man's sword hit the ground as the goblin's blade chopped through his wrists, severing his hands and making blood fountain from his arms. The man brought the stumps of his hands up to his face as he screamed. Boko stood there a moment and laughed. After that, he chopped off both the man's legs above the knee and began hacking him to pieces. Iden allowed this to continue for a few minutes until the crowd began to get bored with it, and a few boos began to rain down. He then removed his feathered beret. That apparently was a signal. One of the iron doors opened, and a dozen guards armed with spears marched out in a line. As soon as Boko spotted them, the goblin understood the fun was over. He threw down his weapon, grabbed a hunk of leg, and made his way back towards the open doorway. The guards then gathered up the bodies in pieces. The one who had been speared through the chest was not moving as he was picked up. The man who'd lost an arm was still clutching at it and talking as the guards approached. One of the guards knelt over him and took out a dagger. The fighter's head was yanked back and his throat cut open like a lamb's. Then he was tossed over the guard's shoulder and carried off. A different guard grabbed the severed arm and sword. Iden turned to his guest, looking triumphant. The two men at the blackboard had already erased what they'd written and were busy putting up the information for the next match.
"Well, what did you think?"
"That was terrible. Just awful," Alice said.
"And yet," Iden said with a chuckle, "you never looked away."
Alice placed a hand over her mouth and was silent.
"I agree with Alice," Waldo said. "That was terrible. That wasn't much of a fight. The goblin obviously knew what he was doing, but those three were worthless. Were they even trained?"
Iden gave a dismissive wave of his hand.
"They got about a week's worth. They were all guilty of unpaid debts. There's no shortage of their kind."
A week was about all the time Bell had had.
"It was barely a fight."
Iden motioned toward the people in the surrounding stands.
"Do they look disappointed to you, Master Rabbit?"
No one was booing or leaving. The crowd seemed as eager and excited as before.
"Not everyone who appears in the pit is here to fight," Iden said. "Some of them are just here to bleed. Luckily, that doesn't require much training."
"If it's too much for you," Lysnam said, "feel free to leave."
"It's fine," Waldo said. "I was just expecting the matches to be more entertaining."
"Ah, but the best is yet to come, Master Rabbit. This is only the first morsel. I will give you a feast for the eyes, I guarantee it."
Iden swept back out into the balcony to announce the next match. Chapter 28 Toby the Bear. Back home, when his mother would have some of the slaves fight each other for the family's entertainment, they were always very skilled. She always demanded that performers be of the best quality. The singers had beautiful voices, the actors who put on plays were experts in the theater. The sex slaves who performed were young, attractive, and very limber. It was no different with the fighters. All of them were trained for at least a year or more, and the matches, usually, paired off combatants of similar skill levels. Sometimes Mother would be in a whimsical mood, and would have blind people or kitchen slaves armed with nothing but loaves of bread fight one another. But even then, everyone was on the same level. Here it was different. Most of the matches were one-sided, with the odds reflecting that. For instance, the third match featured a gladiator named Phyrox against a pair of unnamed goblins. He was listed as 5-1 favorite and made short, bloody work of his opponents. When he was done butchering the goblins, he walked off to wild cheers and the crowd chanting his name.
"Not everyone who fights in the pits is a criminal," Iden explained. "We always get some adventurers who come here seeking fame and fortune. Most of them volunteer for the arena, dreaming of winning a tournament and claiming a huge prize in gold. A few are more realistic, though. Any free man who wins his match earns a silver mark."
"What about the losers?" Alice asked.
"Oh, they win a complimentary place in a common grave."
"What about the people who are forced to fight?"
"Well, it depends. The ones who come here because of debt get one silver mark credited toward their debt, win or lose. If they survive long enough to pay off the entire amount plus the interest, they and their families are freed."
"Their families get arrested, too?"
Iden nodded.
"The merchant houses usually won't lend to someone unless they have a wife and at least 2 or 3 healthy children. Most loans are for 5 silver marks at 50% interest, with the full sum due in 6 months. Failure to pay means arrest for the entire family
and forced servitude until the full sum is recovered. Alice gasped. Why would anyone borrow money with terms like that? Iden gave an indifferent shrug. There are a lot of desperate people in the rat's nest, and indentured servants at least get fed. Alice looked miserable, and Waldo could feel melancholy coming from her. Do any of them ever last long enough to actually win their freedom? Waldo asked.
It happens, but it's rare. Every once in a while someone just takes to the training and turns out to be a natural.
What about the criminals who aren't here because of debts?
They're sentenced to a set number of matches. For instance, minor theft earns you 1, assault 4, common theft 5, rape 7, and so on. If they complete their sentence, they're freed. But like I said, it's rare.
I thought thieves got their hands cut off.
That's only if the crime occurs inside the gold wall, Lysnam said. The laws are different depending which side of the wall you're on.
That doesn't seem fair, Alice said.
What do you mean? Lysnam asked. It's only sensible to have alternate laws depending on who the victim is.
You mean whether it's someone rich?
That's how things are. The residents in the Gold City and many of the guests are some of the wealthiest and most important people in the world. It only makes sense we protect them and keep them safe.
And what about everyone else?
We do what we can, Lysnam said. But we have to have our priorities.
Waldo nodded in silence. In Alteroth there was one set of rules for the members of the 7 great houses, and one for everyone else. In almost every country, lords could do almost anything to their peasants without consequence. In this world, you were either a wolf or a sheep. How many matches does a murderer get? Waldo asked out of curiosity.
1, Iden said.
Waldo raised an eyebrow. Just 1? You treat murder the same way you do a minor theft?
Be patient, Master Rabbit. You'll understand in a bit.
For the 5th match, the blackboard read, Toby the Bear versus Murderer. There were no odds listed, and when Iden announced it, he didn't bother with a 5-minute wait. That made sense, as it was less of a match and more of an execution. The unnamed killer was pushed out his door with the same clothing as everyone else, but without a weapon. Out the opposite door came a huge, shaggy brown bear. The creature was only a little smaller than Gronk. The animal let loose a roar and immediately stampeded towards the man.
"We don't feed Toby for 3 days before an appearance," Iden said.
"I can see why," Waldo said. The man naturally tried to run, but the bear chased him down immediately. The bear knocked him over and pinned him with one paw as he tore off an arm. The man was still alive and kept struggling as the animal began its meal. The crowd watched and applauded as the bear ate everything but the head and a few scraps. The guards trying to force the animal back through its archway took longer than the event itself. The audience became a bit bored, and there were a few boos and catcalls.
"Next time you might want to try a pack of zombies instead," Waldo said. "They're more efficient and will simply leave when you order."
Iden, Alice, and Lysnam all looked at him. "What? Do you have an issue with zombies?"
Alice silently shook her head. Lysnam looked annoyed. Iden complimented him in a sense of humor, and quickly got up to announce the next match.
The 7th match was interesting. The blackboard read, Grand Melee, Gold, 2-1, versus Red, 2-1, versus Green, 2-1, versus Blue, 2-1. When the sands in the hourglass ran out, Iden gave a signal. 4 sets of bars slid open. From each archway came 5 men with swords in their hands. The men of each group had bright paint on their chests and backs. The different groups huddled together and began to cautiously approach the middle of the arena floor. Waldo noticed people in the stands waving rags with one of the matching colors. Many of the rag wavers were sitting together in little groups.
"The Grand Melee is my own creation," Lysnam said, puffing at his chest. "The rats are stupid. They all have a favorite color that they cheer for. The bets are always spread out pretty evenly. So, because of the odds, we're guaranteed a fat profit no matter who wins."
"You sound very proud of that," Waldo said. "Most mages would take pride in creating a new spell or beating a powerful enemy. You and your guild really do love making money, don't you?" The smile on Lysnam's face was instantly wiped away.
"And you don't? Why are you here now if not for 5 pieces of gold?"
"I never said gold wasn't useful or that I didn't enjoy acquiring it.
but it's just a means to an end. I want it because it will help me reach my goal, whereas you and your guild are obsessed by it. Truthfully, your single-minded devotion to wealth seems rather petty to me.
Unlike your noble goal of conquering Torikai in the name of Avalon, Lysnum spat.
Waldo shrugged. They don't sing songs about accountants.
You really think you're better than me, don't you?
Yes, but don't feel bad about it.
You white mages sicken me. You look down on us for caring about wealth and business, but every one of you carries a purse filled with gold. You talk about honor and justice while you plot with drow to overthrow a kingdom. You wring your hands and pretend to be sickened by the games, then you start a war that's going to spill rivers of blood. You and your kind are the worst hypocrites in the world.
Waldo nodded.
We sure are.
Lysnum's face was so red, it was starting to edge towards purple. Of the first 9 matches, only 2 were like the ones he'd seen growing up. The 4th and 8th contests involved 2 named opponents with odds that were even. In those matches, the fighters were skilled and you couldn't know who would win until the fatal blow was struck. For all the rest, the favorite always won easily. One would normally expect that to make things boring, but to Waldo's surprise, the opposite was true. Even when it was obvious from the start who was going to win, there was still a certain drama to things. You still wanted to watch and see exactly how it would end. Each time the death blow came, each time the blood onto the sand, the crowd would shout. No matter how one-sided the fight, all eyes would be locked onto the action, unable to look away. Even Alice, with all her objections, watched with a certain fascination as men fought and died. Waldo had never enjoyed watching people suffer the way his mother and Enver did. He did not enjoy killing or death, but there was a certain natural appeal to the struggle, to seeing men fight with all they had for their lives, even when it was obvious they had no hope. From the constant cheers from the crowds, it was obvious this feeling was not unique to him. It was enlightening to see that people everywhere loved blood and violence. As soon as the 9th match ended, Aiden scooted to the balcony. He spun about to deliberately make his cape billow. The 2 servants were wiping the board clean and starting to chalk information on the 10th match. Guards were still dragging bodies away through the sands.
"Are you entertained, my friends?"
Aiden boomed out. A raucous cheer answered him. Aiden stood on the balcony, drinking in the happy shouts.
"This was going to be the final match before I lined up my 2 barbarian champions. On one side we have Nendara, a drow warrior with a heart as black as her skin, a cruel monster who murders as easy as she breathes. Armed with nothing but a long knife, she will take on 10 brave heroes, 10 men working as one against a vicious, bloodthirsty drow."
He flipped the hourglass over.
"Place your bets, and let's enjoy the show."
Waldo looked at the blackboard. Nendara the drow, 1-20, versus 10 men, 20-1.
"Can I bet on this match?" Waldo asked.
Lysnum frowned but nodded.
"Certainly, Master Rabbit. We honor all bets. You can place any wager you like directly with me."
"Wonderful." Waldo turned to Alice. "Give him the 5 gold coins we have."
Alice put a protective hand on her purse.
"Darling, we just got these, and you want to risk them?"
"I've seen her fight. It's no risk."
"You have great faith in your drow allies," Lysnum said.
Waldo shrugged. "I have eyes." Not looking happy, Alice opened her purse and fished out 5 gold coins. She handed them over to Lysnum. Surprisingly, he didn't look any happier.
"The drow aren't invincible, you know. They can die like everyone else."
Waldo nodded.
"Just not easily."
Lysnum scowled.
"Before you came here, I never imagined a white mage could openly plot with drow. I've heard many stories about your order, but no one ever suggested you'd be willing to work with a pack of inhuman monsters."
"Well, we're plotting to take over the world. You have to be flexible when you're doing that."
Lysnum scowled and waved at one of the serving girls to bring him more wine. When the sands ran out, Aiden signaled. 2 sets of bars slid out of the way. Out of one entrance sauntered Nendara, or Nen as he thought of her. Not only her skin color, but her face was different from what they'd been at the gymnasium. She wore slightly more clothing than the male contestants. Nen had a cloth tunic that covered her from her shoulders to the top of her thighs. In her right hand she clenched a curved iron dagger with a blade about a foot long.
She smiled up at the cheering crowd and gave them a wave. Out of the opposite doorway, 10 men filed out, one after the other. They had an assortment of weapons, swords, axes, clubs, and spears. Waldo was surprised to see every one of them also carried a round shield.
"Why are they carrying shields?" Waldo asked. "No one else has."
"There aren't any set rules here," Aiden replied, "except that the matches are all to the death. A certain someone asked me to allow Nandara's opponents to carry shields."
Aiden sent a long, deliberate gaze Lysnum's way.
"The certain someone also asked me to allow them to wear armor, but I thought that a bit much. The crowd wouldn't like it."
Down below them, the 10 men quickly formed a line, standing shoulder to shoulder. Their shields were locked together, and they crept forward in a slow, cautious tread. Nan stood where she was, flipping the knife into the air, still smiling.
"It won't make a difference," Waldo said.
"I know," Aiden agreed. Lysnum muttered something and sipped his wine. Nen remained where she was, just standing there, watching as her opponents crept closer. The crowd began to clap and a chant rose.
"Nen-da-ra! Nen-da-ra! Nen-da-ra!"
Thousands of voices called out.
"She's popular," Waldo said in surprise. "I always thought commoners hated the drow."
"They do, as a people," Aiden said. "But Nen-dara is one of our best performers, a star. The crowd always loves someone with real talent."
Waldo nodded. "Yes, talent should always be appreciated." Nen just stood there, flipping her dagger and watching as her opponents approached. They took one careful step after the next, making sure to stay in a line, their shields all pressed together, their weapons ready. Despite their advantage in numbers, it was obvious they didn't want to approach Nen. They were a flock of sheep charging a wolf, and knew it. She waited until they were within 6 paces, then suddenly dashed forward a couple steps. The men reacted, backing away from her, a couple of them stumbling over their own feet. Their neat little line temporarily broken, she charged straight at the man all the way to her right. He carried a longsword, and beside him was a man with an axe. He swung his sword even as he was stumbling back away from her. Nan avoided his clumsy blow, without even having to break stride. She slammed her dagger into the side of his throat and drove the point clean through. Nen wrenched it out, and blood spurted out from the man's ruined neck. He dropped his sword and clutched at his torn throat with both hands. Even as the first man was dying, his neighbor with the axe tried to attack Nen. He swung as hard as he could, aiming for her head. She dropped smoothly to her knees, and the axe head passed harmlessly above her. She then gave 2 swift and vicious stabs up into the man's groin. He howled and doubled over, blood staining his cloth and spilling down his thighs. Seeing he was no longer a threat, Nen ignored him and picked up the sword that he had dropped and was moving towards the next closest enemy. The third man was armed with a spear. He drew it back and threw it at her. To his credit, it was a decent throw and likely would have struck her. Nen, however, knocked the spear aside with her sword. She then ran up to the now unarmed man and drove her blade through his ribs. Nen ripped the sword back out of his chest and stood ready, a sword in her left hand and her dagger in her right, 3 opponents already lying in the sand dead or dying. The remaining 7 were screaming at one another, trying to face her and trying to get away from her all at once. All of this had taken place within 12 heartbeats. Nen looked at them and smiled. The match lasted perhaps 2 minutes. It lasted that long only because Nen wanted it to. She took her time with the last couple of opponents. The way the audience's shouts turned deafening, it was clear they appreciated her efforts. When she finished, her face, tunic, and arms were drenched red. 9 bodies were spread out along the sandy ground, with 1 poor fellow groaning and still clutching his nether regions. Nen stood there in the middle of the slaughter she'd wrought and waved up at the people, cheering her, a satisfied look on her face. She then turned to face the platform and held out both arms in front of her, palms up in the drow salute. Laughing, Aiden gave her a bow in return. Lysnum returned the 5 gold marks to Alice, along with 5 silver ones. Bars slid clear from 2 doorways, and guards came out to clear the arena floor and prepare it for the final match of the evening. One of them told Nen to return to the holding area she'd come out of. She nodded and tossed down the sword and dagger. Nen began to walk back when she stopped and casually picked up one of the spears lying on the ground. The guards all froze and looked at one another nervously. The crowd noticed and oohed. Then, without warning, she broke into a run towards where Iden stood watching. As she neared, she planted the spear point first into the ground and used it to vault up and onto the balcony. Chapter 29 Sucker Bet. Nen vaulted up and over the rail and touched down square in the middle of the small balcony, graceful as a cat. She was coated in blood and smiling with teeth so white they seemed to shine. Several things happened at once. Iden was forced to jump back a couple steps to avoid being landed on. Lysnam dropped the goblet he was holding and let the wine splatter on the wooden floor. He scrambled to his feet and yanked out a wand from a hidden pocket. He pointed it at Nen, his face pale and eyes wide. As he did this, he stumbled against the couch and nearly fell back onto it. One of the serving girls fainted. The other three clutched onto each other and looked terrified. The two guards by the stairs grabbed the hilts of their swords but didn't draw them. They also didn't take a step forward, instead inching back closer to the stairs. Through the bond, Waldo felt Alice's sudden panic. He reached over and grabbed her hand. "Don't," he whispered. If she suddenly sprouted wings and claws, that would be a problem. He remained seated on the couch beside her. He wasn't frightened by Nen's unexpected arrival. He'd spoken to her and gotten to know her a bit. He didn't think she was about to start massacring everyone there. The fact she was unarmed was a good sign. But with Drow, who could really tell? It was Iden who recovered first. He doffed his plumed hat and gave her a friendly nod.
"Hello, Nendara. Did you want something?"
She returned the gesture.
"Do you think I could watch the last match with you? I've been training Belle and I want to see how she does."
Iden gave a swift glance to Lysnam, who was still pointing his wand at her. The guildmaster gave an immediate, violent shake of his head.
"Nendara," Iden said in a reasonable tone. "That's probably not... Thanks. I appreciate it."
She stepped off the balcony and walked past the table with all the food and drinks. The three serving girls who were still conscious continued to hold one another as they visibly trembled. Nen went directly up to Lysnam, ignoring the wand. She halted right in front of him, with the tip of his wand less than a foot from her head. She put both hands behind her back and looked as happy as a cat with a room full of plump mice.
"Hi, Lysnam. It's been a while."
"You don't belong here," he said with a low growl.
"Well, to hear you tell it, me and my people don't belong anywhere."
"You belong in your own cities, far away from here and deep in the earth."
"But your queen makes us feel so welcome, and there are so many wonderful things here."
"Are you going to keep pointing your wand at her?" Waldo asked. "That's rather rude." Nen beamed at him.
"Thank you, Master Waldo. It's nice to know there's one mage here with decent manners."
"What would a drow know about manners?" Lysnam demanded.
He did put away his wand, slipping it back into one of the pockets of his robes.
"I think you're making everyone feel a bit nervous," Iden said.
"Why would little old me make anyone nervous?" Nen asked.
She made a show of bringing her hands back out in front of her face.
"Oh, it's the blood, isn't it? I must look a mess."
She grabbed the front of Lysnam's robes and began wiping her hands and arms with them.
"What do you think you're doing?"
Lysnam yelled.
"You don't mind, do you? Your clothes are already red, so who'd notice?"
When she got done with her arms, she brought the cloth up to clean off her face and neck. Lysnam looked furious. But he stood there and did nothing as Nen smeared blood all over his robes.
"Nendara," Iden said nervously, "you are being very disrespectful to my guests right now."
Nen paused.
"Do you feel disrespected?"
she asked the guildmaster in a faint voice. He stared down at her, mouth set in a grim line.
"I didn't think so."
She continued cleaning herself off. When she got done, she let go of his robes. Most of the blood did vanish amid the crimson, but the eagle and gold thread was clearly stained.
"There," Nen said cheerfully, "that's better. Now everyone can relax."
Lysnam looked murderous. Nen turned her back on him and went over to the table. She looked over all the delicious food laid out on it, before snatching up an apple and taking a bite. Lysnam sat back down on his couch.
"Bring me more wine."
One of the serving girls let go of the others and hurriedly filled a new goblet. She brought it over to him, while making sure to give Nen a very wide berth. Still holding her apple,
Nan sauntered over to Waldo's couch. "Can I join you?" Waldo nodded and waved to his left. "Please." She plopped down next to Waldo. Alice leaned forward to stare at her with narrowed eyes. Nan grinned back.
"You don't need to worry. He's not my type. I like my men big, rough, and cruel."
"I'm cruel," Waldo blurted out. "No, you're not," Alice hissed, and wrapped herself around his right arm. She did not take her eyes off of Nan. Nan leaned back and took another bite of her apple.
"So, you're not even trying to hide the fact you're working with the drow?"
Lysnam demanded.
"They have what I want," Waldo said.
"And that justifies doing anything at all?"
Nan burst out in laughter.
"Look who's talking.
Valeria would destroy this kingdom if we let her."
"You have us all wrong. The only thing the exalted lady wants is for all of us to be friends."
"Friends?" Lysnam spat out. "As if drow would ever know the meaning of that word."
"Careful, now," Nan chided. "You're starting to hurt my feelings."
She took another bite of her apple. Aiden looked worried.
"Nendara, you're not going to do something foolish, are you?"
She took a last bite of the apple and tossed away the core.
"Probably not, but he does make it tempting."
Aiden glanced from one side to the other and back again. Shaking his head, he waved to the two men at the blackboard and walked back out into the balcony. Waldo saw them quickly write the information for the 11th and final match of the evening. Asgir the Northman, 3-1, versus Bell the Plain Savage, 1-3. Waldo immediately got a fluttering feeling in the pit of his stomach.
"Why is Bell the underdog?"
Lysnam grinned and sipped his wine.
"Asgir is a great warrior and a champion of the fighting pits."
"And what else?"
"He's human, if that's what you're asking."
Lysnam took another deliberate sip.
"Aren't you going to place a bet on your servant?"
The raven flying about inside his belly suddenly became an entire flock.
"You want me to bet on Bell?"
"I'm merely being courteous, Master Rabbit."
Beside him, Nan chuckled.
"If Lysnam is asking you for your money, it means he thinks it's a sucker bet."
"And why would you think that?" Waldo asked. Lysnam sat on his couch and looked relaxed.
"Northmen are fierce."
Out on the balcony, Aiden shouted out to the crowd.
"It's time, my friends. The last match. The best match. The one that will put all the others to shame. Two barbarian champions from the far ends of the world. Aska, from the frozen wastes of Kajamin. Against Bell, a horde rider from the endless plains. A fight you will never see again in your lifetime. A fight you will tell your children and grandchildren about."
He flipped over the hourglass and set it on the railing.
"Place your bets!"
All through the stands, people rushed to do exactly that.
"Well, Master Rabbit?" Lysnam asked. "Don't you have faith in your Bell?"
The ravens were trying to claw their way out of his stomach. Through the bond, he knew Bell wasn't worried at all. She was feeling nothing but excitement. He knew Bell could also sense his feelings and try to relax. Despite his worries, he turned to Alice.
"Give him our gold."
Alice sucked in her lips.
"You sure, darling?"
"Bell is going to win. Bell has to win, so it would be silly not to bet."
"It certainly would," Lysnam said.
A worried look on her face, Alice took out the 5 gold coins and handed them to Lysnam. When she had done that before, he'd kept them in his hand throughout Nan's match. This time he opened his purse and dropped the coins in. When the sands ran out, Aiden waved both arms above his head. 2 sets of bars slid out from 2 doorways. Out of one came Bell. She wore a tunic just like Nen had. In her right hand was Rabbit Slayer. The sword held a golden aura and was obviously magical. She strutted right out onto the sands, pumping her left arm into the air to encourage the crowd to yell even louder. From the opposite doorway, a tall, muscular man came out far more cautiously. He had long, flowing blonde hair and a braided mustache. His bare chest was covered in scars. In both hands he held the biggest sword Waldo had ever seen. And it glowed. It gave off a fainter light than Rabbit Slayer's, but it was still clear. Waldo leapt to his feet staring, his jaw open. Nan sighed. I told you it was a sucker bet. She snapped her fingers and pointed at one of the serving girls. Hey, bring me another apple.
Chapter 30. The Big Match. Waldo rounded on Iden.
Why does he have a magical sword?
Iden swept his feathered hat off his head and gave a deep bow.
The guildmaster provided it to him. And why didn't you mention it to me?
You never asked. The only question you asked me was whether or not Oscar was human. Had you asked me if he would carry a magical weapon, I would have answered truthfully. I've not lied to you about anything, Master Rabbit. Please do not blame me for something that is not my fault.
Waldo could guess whose fault this was. Lysnam was seated on his couch looking pleased with himself.
This is why you paid to have Bell fight her tonight.
The guildmaster nodded.
I've had reports about how inept your servant is at swordplay. I'm sure she would have no chance at all against Varga tomorrow. But why take chances? If she is killed tonight and doesn't even make it to the arena, it will embarrass you and Avalon in the Queen's eyes.
So this is about embarrassing me?
It's about stopping you from handing my guild and my kingdom over to the drow. I would never allow that to happen.
Down on the sands, Bell and the Northmen were slowly circling one another. The steady and certain movements of the blonde barbarian seemed of skill, and many long years of training. Just comparing how he moved to Bell's loping steps made it obvious how this would end. It must have been just as apparent to Alice. She stood and put a hand on Waldo's arm.
Darling, you have to do something.
If you intervene in any way, Iden said, you will be breaking the contract you made with me, Master Rabbit.
He gave Waldo another bow.
I am sorry, but I did make it clear to you that all matches are to the death. The gods of the realm teach that contracts are sacred and must be honored no matter the cost,
Lysnam said in a helpful tone.
Let me guess, Waldo said. The punishment for breaking a contract is death.
No, merely permanent banishment from the city and the kingdom. Your pet would be immediately disqualified from the Queen's tournament, and all bets placed on her would be lost. So by all means, save her. Either way, I win.
Waldo looked back out on the sands. The Northman swung a couple times, and Bell managed to block. Through the bond, he could sense just a tiny sliver of worry coming from Bell. He could literally end this with just a word. One word of magic could summon her to his side. Then he, Alice, and Bell would have to immediately leave the city. Without the knowledge of where he might find a dragon.
Darling, what are you waiting for?
He hesitated and felt conflicted. He knew Bell was in very serious danger and almost certain to die unless he intervened. But if he did that, he would lose his chance. Dragon lairs were always located far from human civilization and near impossible to find. If he didn't get the location from Valeria, what were the chances he would stumble on one later? He might spend the rest of his life searching and never finding so much as a trace. What would his mother think if he just gave up this opportunity? What would she say if he put the life of his familiar ahead of the information he needed to return home? A true dark mage wouldn't think twice about sacrificing a familiar for a chance to get something he needed. How would... The crowd roared. A pair of burly guards led Bell to a heavy door with two iron bolts. One of them grunted and slammed them back.
Wait in here until the bars open, the other one said. When that happens, go out and fight. Don't try to stay in here, or we'll come in and drive you out at spear point.
Got it, sweetie. Any words of advice?
Yeah, don't die.
Bell gave a lisping laugh.
I'll try and remember.
The other guard pulled the door open. It was half a foot of solid oak.
Get in.
Bell ducked her head and went inside. She was sure that looked a little weird as the doorway had plenty of room for her human form, but was too short for her real body. As soon as she crossed the threshold, the door was shoved back into place, and she could hear the rusty bolt slammed home. The room was 10 feet square, with walls made of red brick. There was a plain wooden bench and an archway. A set of iron bars blocked it. The top of the bars were attached to some chains that ran to a hole in the wall. Looking past those bars, Bell could only see flat, sandy ground and some bleachers packed full of people. Before being brought here, she'd been kept in a holding area with 20 other people, all of them human. A few of them had been relaxed. Most had been scared out of their minds. A couple had cried openly, and one man had knelt in a corner and prayed fervently to his gods. Guards had come to call out names and take people away, either one at a time or in groups.